You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, episode 290. Now, listeners, I hope that you are fully recovered post-Tokyo and that you're all ready to get out and about and competing and enjoying yourselves and bringing a bit of the thrills and the spills of cross-country to you. And we thought that we would actually do an extension of a show that we did a few months ago with Irish international event rider Sam Watson, which was all about setting up for cross-country success. It was episode 283, so you can go back and listen to it if you would like to do so. And that was basically everything you do when you land at the event site in order to make sure that you have a good cross-country round. So it covered everything from walking the course, warming up, and actually what to do when you're out on course as well. So that is well worth going back to listen, but we thought we would actually take a step back and say, okay, well, how do you get to your event full of confidence? So we have roped in one of the best cross-country riders in the country. She is none other than Lynn Szymanski. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Now, I'm really looking forward to picking your brains about this because it is one of the best bits about eventing, in my opinion. And I'm sure many of people love the cross-country side of things. And this is all about how to get to your event feeling full of confidence, feeling safe, ready to go, and ready to tackle what's in front of you. So we thought we'd take it right back to the beginning a little bit. So let's go right back to the start, whether it be somebody has a younger horse or they're less experienced themselves. What should you be doing at home before you even think about leaving the yard and the barn to go and find a big cross-country schooling facility?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends a little on what horse you're sitting on, if you're a professional or if you are teaching somebody that is maybe first starting out. But I like to always make sure I'm starting in the arena. If it's someone that's newer to eventing or a newer payer, and setting some basic exercises up in the arena that, you know, gets them used to something that they're going to see on cross country, giving the horse footwork and giving the rider some basic tools on, you know, how to understand how to find their straightness and how to turn both directions and figuring out where the gas pedal is, figuring out where the whoa is, understanding, you know, what sort of balance they're supposed to be in, what speed they're supposed to be at. A lot of it really is just wrapping your head around basics. And it's actually pretty incredible when you sit down and start talking to people that have done it for so long, how long you can talk about the basics of how much you need to, you know, understand before you're going out there. And with my young horses, I'm off the bat trying to set up tools for them to be able to be successful all the way to the top. So even, you know, as very young horses that haven't even jumped yet, we're starting to do some skinny rails and lots of turning and things that are making them always have to think. Because I know when I go out there, I'm not going to always be perfect. And I need to make sure that I have a partner that I can rely on as well, that is self-sufficient, that I've set him up for success as well as I've set myself up for success. And then once we've done that, I will, you know, take him out and do that same sort of stuff out in the field. But my horses, I start, you know, at a young age, doing the same thing in terrain. But riders as well, they need to get experience, even if it's not jumping, if they're just starting out, understanding how to ride the terrain. Because once you put solid obstacles in there, it's even more important to have a real concept and grasp of exactly what speed and how you're going to make your turn and where your position is and how to, you know, ride that horse particular to the course.
I think that's a really good point. And actually, I think Lauren Nicholson said it on a previous show, bushwhacking. That's what I think what mm-hmm. she calls it, of, you know, just going off the beaten track slightly. And if there is a tiny little ditch when you're out for a hack, just letting your horse gently walk over it and, you know, going up the bank and down the bank the other side and all of those things so that they get the experience and they know where their feet are, as you say. Okay, that's a lot to do at home. I guess the basics, though, it's that foundation, isn't it? And it's the pyramid of, it's the widest part. And if you can get those bits right, that actually the bits that come above it sort of stack on top of each other quite nicely.
Yep, absolutely. It, you know, it takes a while to really master those basics. You find with the horses that you're producing up to the top, the more time you spend really instilling the basics and the groundwork for their success in the long term. You see some people that will rush the horses up through the levels, and then that comes to catch up with them after a while. Whether the horse doesn't quite understand how to seek the next jump. And that's where I really like to spend a lot of time, making sure the horses and the riders both understand what the job is. Because then once you really have mastered that, as you continue to climb up the grades, it shouldn't be as hard as it sometimes is. And it usually ends up being that there's some tool that you've missed, you know, in your training and your education or the horse's education. And usually 9 out of 10 times when there's some greenness and you keep trying to get to a goal or keep pushing a little too quickly, it will come back to catch you at some point. So I really think if your horse is a little peaky at water or, a little funny jumping up banks, spend as much time as you can doing that. I have a great picture of it too. Donner, who is known for his cross country prowess, when he was a younger horse, could not figure out how to jump up a bank out of water. He'd jump on up a bank, just a regular bank, but out of water, could not figure out the footwork to find where that final takeoff step was. And I didn't have cross country schooling at my place when I had him as a young horse. So I had to trailer him 2 times a week for a year to just go walk up and down banks out of water until I got him to really understand what happened in that space and do that on the rope and let the horse discover it for themselves. So it's really, you can't skip over those things because eventually it does come to catch you. He went on to be a fantastic horse, but I did know that in his career, and I got up to the training, moving up to prelim level, and really got lucky getting up a bank one time, and then said to myself, okay, I really have to take the time to go back to the basics with this. And it's, it happens with horses all the way up through the 5-star level where something will end up catching you out. So, it's really important to flag that with your trainer if you're a greener rider on a greener horse, or not skip over that if you're, a little more educated and on your own path.
I find that amazing. And actually, I'm sure there'll be people listening to this that think, oh, it's nice to know that even the best horses, the best cross-country horses in the world have had those sort of challenges, and with time and effort, and also that there's no quick fix. And just because you're a professional rider doesn't mean that you can click your fingers and it all sort of happen and fall into place. It takes time and it takes effort and it takes commitment, but it's so worth it to do it right to get the end result. Okay, so when do you know that you're ready? Say you've got a younger horse or perhaps a more experienced horse, but you are less experienced. When do you know that you're ready to set sail for a schooling facility? And what would be your biggest tip before you go?
Yeah, I think really the first time you go out to a schooling facility, you don't necessarily have to be jumping all the jumps. I think if it's a green horse, I like to just get them off property and go somewhere, even if it's down the road to a friend's place that doesn't have a ton of cross country jumps, or somewhere that has a lot and not jumping anything, and just get them used to the environment, because it's a lot for young horses to take in when you first go to a facility. It's so easy. We joke, if you go to Wendura, to Boyd Martin's place, it is Disneyland for cross country schooling. And it's really easy to just get a little too crazy jumping so much the first time out. It's good for the horses. You want them to go into a schooling atmosphere feeling confident about what their job is. And if you overface them the first time, or if you have ones that are quite keen about their job and make it something that's a little too exciting, it really does make it hard to continue the training progression for them. So I think just getting off the property and, essentially, yes, like bushwhacking, but you take it into a schooling sort of idea that you don't have to jump everything the first time. And then the next time, if you're a greener rider, it's making sure you go out and work with somebody that is a good trainer that you trust. You know, a lot of times we get into these clinic situations, and yes, you've jumped a training prelim size jump at home, but you really have not done that much cross country schooling. You're setting yourself up and your horse up. It's not really fair to you as a pair or to the clinician that's teaching you. You really want to make sure you put yourself in a place where you feel more than prepared. Because that's often where you can run into trouble, is if you say, oh, I've jumped that height, so I'm going to go out there and jump all those jumps or be in that group. But it drives me mad, honestly, as a trainer, when you get someone that really tries to be in that top group because they've jumped that height. And I find that, you know, it's not fair to the horse and rider. They learn so much more by making sure they're really starting at the level where they feel like, you know, they're instilling good basics and learning from that and ready to move up to the next level.
I guess you shouldn't be moving up until it feels easy, until you feel...
It should feel easy, yep.
Yeah.
And multiple times out, you know, you shouldn't go out, and that's in schooling and on course. You shouldn't go out and have one round where, oh, okay, you know, there were one or two jumps where got a little hairy, but, you know, the rest is really good. It should be very boring. And I say you should always want to publish your entire, you know, round on social media and have everyone watch it and not be embarrassed by it and be able to do that in multiple rounds, both in competition and in schooling. And you know what? And the problem is cross country riding, it's not all beautiful and perfect, but even in the hairy moments, you need to be proud of those moments where you sat in the right place and you had the right reactions and your horse had the right reactions. And it's not something that you post and someone would go, woo, you know, it really has to feel easy before you think about moving up as a pair.
That's a really good point, actually. Can I bring it back to horses like Donna, who would have been competing at championship at 5-star level? When you then took them cross-country schooling and jumped anything at home with them, would I be correct in saying that you wouldn't necessarily be going and jumping the bigger fences, and that actually even the best horses jumped the smaller ones as well?
Yeah, definitely. And it is a little different for each horse. You know, I think as part of it is really knowing your horse. Some horses do need a bigger fence and maybe fewer. Some horses need a lot of warm up over small stuff and just working on the basics. Some of them are good in a sort of group setting if you're having a group lesson. Some of them you have to go out there, school, and from start to finish, not sit still. So it's knowing what type of horse you have and setting that environment up for it to be a successful school. And yeah, even the most experienced horses, you don't need to be jumping the size that you would be competing at. There is a time and a place to do that, but if I'm going to be doing that, I have my own cross country schooling set up at home. I replicate that with brush, or something that gives you the feel that you're riding to a bigger jump without making it something that's such a big effort for the horse, or so punishing if you are a little bit wrong and you do make a mistake. So the schooling is setting up, you know, the same things you're going to see in competition, the same exercises, the same tools that you and the horse have to be negotiating without having to go and jump proper height at everything.
That's a really nice point, actually. And I think it leads me on to my next question of the kinds of fences that you should be picking. Mm-hmm. When you're schooling, what should you be looking for in a fence that makes you feel confident? Because do you know what? We all would love all of the safety devices and everything to be in every cross-country schooling field that there possibly is. But ultimately, we all have to take a degree of responsibility ourselves as well. So what can you be looking for to make sure that you're sort of able to give yourself the challenge, but also the confidence as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if you're going out schooling, picking a venue that, you know, is a reputable venue and does a good job with the safety of their jumps. There's a lot of places you can go school, and there's a lot of antiquated cross country jumps that probably, you know, would have been there from 15, 20 years ago when you have a stack of hay bales or barrels sitting out somewhere. But, you know, there is a lot that can be done with making sure it's as safe as possible. If you're going somewhere you don't know very well, and even somewhere you do know well, is kind of walking that area or even in your warm-up riding around and seeing the takeoff and landing on all the jumps, seeing what the surfaces are like, you know, jumps that are pinned, especially when you're going at a higher rate of speed. But even sometimes it is so necessary, even at the low levels on a jump that is able to be moved. I think pinning, staking the jumps into the ground, and that's very important. I do that with my own now. Just, you know, even when I'm riding, I make sure that those jumps are pinned, not just for when, or staked to the ground, not just when other people are coming and I'm teaching them, because it can happen on any horse at any size fence. And I always pick ones that, you know, you have the problem when you go to these schooling days after a competition is, sometimes you have everything flagged and you can end up jumping 100 jumps out there. But it's really not necessary. You want to make a plan for what you're trying to achieve with that horse going into the school. And then also just in the jumps that I pick at home, I like to have a face that's kind. So something that's not super, super vertical and large and wide. If it's going to be quite tall, it needs to have a bit of a ramp to it or something with a brush on top, a good ground line. You know, there's a lot that you can even just probably Google into the internet and find some tips on how to set your own stuff up to make sure you're giving yourself the best possible chance. I take little boxes that I punch holes in and put brush into on any jumps that look like they need a little ground line so I can move them around. Even a rail, even a colored rail or something visually that will help the horse read it. The colors of the jumps are also very important in how horses read the colors and you know, even things you think about the color of a jump compared to the ground or the background or seeing it against the water. It's really thinking about how the horses are going to visually read them. So anything you can set up for yourself that's giving it a kind face and giving your horse the best possible chance of reading it.
That's a really nice point, actually. So you have something in the trailer that you would have available if you wanted to put a ground line in front of something. I guess then having somebody on the ground to be able to help you with those sorts of things is also really beneficial as well.
It is. And like if you have something like that that's easy to move, and you don't need it a ton, but it is helpful. And I also have a big plastic pot, so it would look like you had a tree in it, but it's very easy to move. Something like that I will use sometimes if I go out to a schooling day. You can put on top of a corner to make a question harder rather than just have the corner, or you can put it so it's a ground line. You can move it so you're creating a tree like you would to create a different sort of you know, a line that you'll see course designers do when you're actually in competition. So there's a lot you can do with a plastic pot in a little box with, you know, fake brush cutting out of it. And it just costs a few dollars if you go, you know, down to your local store.
Okay. I like that a lot. All righty. What about the sort of deciding what to do? We've kind of already touched upon, you know, there's quite often a sort of a mind-boggling amount of options and you kind of want to jump all the jumps and get your money's worth because you've made a really long trip and made the effort to get there. But actually, how do you decide what to do? How important is it going in with a game plan as to what you would like to achieve by the end of that session before you've even got on your horse?
Yeah, I mean, I think for any level that's important, right? If you are, you know, you've done two events, you still, if you're going to a cross country school with your trainer, you have to have a dialogue with them and say, well, it felt quite green to the ditch. So, you know, I'd like to start out maybe giving him some confidence because I feel I lost some confidence. And then you work yourself up to where you want to work on, because if you just start out attacking the problem, you know, it can give your confidence a bit of a shake and the horse's as well. So it's a fine line to walk. And that's why as a greener rider, greener horse, it's good to have a coach that you trust and you have a really good dialogue between. And then if you're a more experienced rider, or you're bringing something along, you know, thinking about where the horse's weaknesses are, but also what has helped to give them more confidence and more education. And doing a combination of all of those skills, right? So if I feel, okay, last time I took a horse out, all the technical questions were actually quite good. I feel like I've done my homework on those, but I was just seeing something really backwards to all the tables, and just, you know, felt a bit silly out there. So then I would take the horse out and just go have a little canter around and find some little stuff so I can get in a rhythm and I can try and, you know, get that horse and myself on the same page where I feel like I understand where its step is and what sort of, you know, speed and balance I should be in, and work myself up to, you know, it doesn't have to all be at the height, but just get the horse and I on the same page. And then if that feels good, I'll put in some technical questions, but maybe not as many because I felt that in the competition that was really good last time out, you know, or vice versa. You're nailing all your ramps and fly fences, but some of the turns were a little hairy or you ran past something. So you'll still start out with a good normal warm up. And then, you know, knowing if you have a horse that doesn't lock onto something, it runs by a B or a C, you set yourself up in a progression always. So you don't come through and do the hardest technical question. You set yourself up to jump the skinny first, and then you jump the ditch to the skinny if it's a, you know, so you're jumping the C and then you're jumping the BC and then you're jumping the ABC. So you're finding confidence and kind of warming yourself up and getting your horse to, you know, think almost a little bit backwards. So it doesn't come in, you know, anticipating, oh gosh, I don't know what's happening. It actually starts to seek the problems and find a solution to it instead of setting them up for failure.
If on that note, if you're sort of then nailing that combination or that challenge that you had set yourself, before you finish, do you then sort of take it back a step again and go back to just say the C element and finish on something that's even easier? Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the horses learn by repetition, right? So you don't want to build yourself up, make it, you know, the most challenging thing you've done and then go home. They don't think like that. You do, you're so excited, but they think, you know, and they learn by the repetition of it. So, you know, if I do something that's quite hard, and especially if the horse is really trying, but it feels like, oh gosh, that was a little worrying still, I'll go back and then maybe just finish with the skinny on the out. Or, you know, if I've jumped a few tables and really feel like I've been able to pick up the pace and see something out of stride at the, you know, speed I am competing at, then I'll just take it back down and have an easy school in the end, or try and settle a horse that, you know, can get a little keyed up, because you want it, you want the cross country to be something that is just natural. You don't want it to be something, you know, it already is exciting. I mean, that's why we do the sport, right? It's adrenaline. but in the end of the day, you want it to be something you feel so prepared for in the end. And you want the horses to feel confident in that, even if they get keen with the actual job. So you want to make it something that is just so easy. You feel like you could do it with your eyes closed.
Yeah, absolutely. What about what do you wear? Because, you know, you put a lot of thought, a lot of people, into what they're going to head out on the actual cross country course in. What should they be doing when they're schooling?
Yeah, I really do feel naked without a vest on. And it's so funny because I could have, even if I'm out in a field, just trotting around, popping little logs, that's fine. But the moment I start actually schooling, I felt naked without a helmet on forever, even before helmets were, you know, something that was very necessary. Even when people wore hunt caps and I was younger, I always felt naked not wearing a helmet. And so, you know, a vest, even when you're jumping your best horse and you're home and you're just popping something, it's so silly not to put it on. And I think the older you get and the more your body starts to hurt and become broken, the more you actually do put it on, because it's, you know, it's usually the time when you're, you know, you're just popping one more, you're just on the horse. It wasn't even important. It's usually in those times that you have the silliest things happen. And it takes one time to really have yourself learn that. And then, I mean, the air vest, still, you will have some people that have two schools of thought on that. I wear an air vest more so even with the younger ones than I would with one I know, just because, you know, that there's so many things that can go wrong. I mean, the air vest I started wearing before it was really even a thing were a hit air when they were still motorcycle vests. And then have worn them ever since. And I just, again, feel quite naked not having the safety gear on. It's just, it's so silly. Why would you not put it on? If you already have a vest on, why wouldn't you just put the air vest on as well? So I not only, it's kind of a selfish thing in the end of the day, I think, not to go out when you're schooling with your safety gear on, because, you know, you owe it to your horse to be able to be there the next day, and your family and everyone. And it's just, you know, and your body too. It makes no sense to me why people would go out and risk something that's so easy to avoid.
Can you look at it a little bit like when you go cross-country schooling, it's a bit of a dress rehearsal for when you go actually to a competition. So, you know, figure out what studs you need to put in and make sure that you've got the right studs in just because you're schooling, because actually that will help you then prepare as to understand what to do at a competition as well.
Yeah.
And if you go schooling and you've got the wrong studs in, you can swap them if you feel like they're not quite right. Whereas you can't practice that at a competition as such. And likewise, I guess, you know, you want to make sure that all of your competition kit is comfortable and safe, and, you know, your hat silk doesn't fly off every 2 seconds or something flaps up in your face and you can't see where you're going. So if you've got everything prepared schooling as though you're going to a competition, then you're rehearsing in that respect as well.
Absolutely. And it is funny because when air vests were newer, I wouldn't always wear them, and then it would feel very foreign to have one on in competition because you're always thinking about the cord, or if I put a vest on that was just my competition vest and, you know, didn't always wear it. It's something I'm always consumed with, something new. I don't like to change at the last second. So I like to have all that gear into place, even to the hole that you have everything attached on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not something you want to go out and be feeling like you're breaking in a new helmet. You know, I actually remember when I went to, I don't know where it was, a championship somewhere, and you usually do get new gear. And I made the mistake of not putting that cross country helmet on before, because we got it pretty soon before we went. And I had the worst headache going into the cross country. And this is at a major championship, and just because it was a new helmet. Yeah. You know, so even if you have to wear it around the barn or wear it in a dressage school, all that stuff, those are things that are taking away a little bit of your ability to be thinking in the moment. So it's just, you know, you got to get all that stuff out of the way so you're as prepared as you can be.
On that note, actually, coming down the center line in Tokyo, Oliver Townend, who was one of the early riders, you know, he's the FEI world number one, and the camera did a close-up shot of his helmet. And on it has a fairly, you know, sizable, it's meant to be very noticeable, purple tag, which is basically a British eventing hat tag, which essentially says BE, which is your USEA, said that the hat is safe to use. And that's the hat that he rides in, obviously, at any local national competition, whether it's a B100 all the way up to badminton. And he was wearing that same hat going down the center line in Tokyo. And so that's obviously, you know, totally sticking with what he knows and is comfortable with. It made a lovely little addition to his dressage attire at the Olympic Games, I would say. Anyway, going completely off piece, let's just kind of round it up then. So we are hopefully feeling full of confidence. We have gone out and achieved what we set out to achieve. I guess maybe we've even achieved it sooner than we thought we had, and it's totally okay. I would say to, you know, do you know what, drop the reins and say that's it, that's enough, that's what I came to do. Mm-hmm. And I've done it, even if it didn't take me very long.
Yep. And I think the other important thing is, even if you don't feel like you have achieved perfection that day, is knowing when to call it a day, because you can come through something 500 times and it can always be a little bit better, always be a little more perfect. But it's also being okay knowing that, you know, you actually have improved from where you were the last time. And it's, you know, Rome was not built in a day. And I think it's easy to lose sight of those little tiny pieces of progress when you're the one sitting on the horse every single day. And, you know, you just want to make it a little bit better. You know, but sometimes that's when something silly happens. If you have gone through a few times, and then you come through again, and you know, it didn't really need to be redone, or you're a little casual about it. It just, there's always another day. And the same thing applies in all the phases. When you come out and you're on a mission and you're flat work and the horse isn't just feeling quite right, or you didn't get accomplished what you went out to do, sometimes you're so much better just saying, all right, I'm going to come back another day and start out there and chip away at it again. So, you know, I think it goes both ways. It's knowing, you know, when it's really good, you don't need to keep going. You can finish on 12 fences if that you achieved what you really needed to do that day. And sometimes you've jumped a little more than you planned on, and you got to really listen to your horse and yourself. And a lot of times you find it's really important, I find, to have someone out there videoing if it's possible, or a friend, because a lot of times what it feels like is very different than what it actually looks like. And sometimes it can feel really terrible, and then you watch a video and you're like, oh, it's actually pretty good. So you got to be careful not to be greedy all the time and trying to keep coming and making it perfect, because there is always another day.
There is. And that, do you know what? That is the perfect way to finish on, because listeners, we wanted the show to all be about, you know, finishing full of confidence and making sure that you're ready to go to your competition. But do you know what? Also, if you're not ready, that's completely okay too. And recognizing that is, you know, the first step of being ready at some point. So, Lynn, thank you so much. It has been lovely to have you on the show, and we really, really appreciate all of those. There's some brilliant words of wisdom in there. And listeners, if you're there thinking, do you know what, my horse won't even go through a puddle when it rains, just think of how good Donna was when he had built those foundations up. You know, it really is possible. So we hope that you have all found something to take from it. Lynn, thank you very much. And
absolutely.
We Thank really appreciate it. Always our pleasure, Lynn. We'll get you back on again. And look, listeners, we hope you've enjoyed it. If you haven't listened to that first show, Setting Up for Cross Country Success with Sam Watson, it is well worth a listen after this one as well, all about how to make your competition run as smoothly as possible. But look, we hope that you found something useful. We would love to hear from you. As always, get in touch at US Eventing across social media. And we have got lots more coming your way. The American Eventing Championships are approaching very quickly, and we'll have a preview show for that for you as well. But for now, that is all we've got time for. A big thank you to Lynn, and a big thank you to you guys for listening.
Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.